Okay, good evening. Just want to make sure that everyone can hear me. I guess just a thumbs up that that it's working and that all is good. All right, so I'm going to begin. First of all, thank you so much once again to everyone who put this series together. It's been an absolute real privilege, honor, to be able to learn these 3 weeks leading up to the Yamim Noraim. And I thank each and every one of you for joining in as we've been learning the topic of holy women during the holy days. This is the third and final shiur of the series. And as so, I want to do something a little different. I'd like to start off this shiur by first dedicating it to the very special Mechanchot and Morot, who are constantly inspiring, constantly teaching, and constantly making Am Yisrael a stronger nation. Personally, I have a tremendous amount of Hakaras HaTov to the many, many Morot and Mechanchot that I've had in my life, starting with my mother, my grandmother, and many other family members who have served as role models to me. But specifically, the various teachers, specifically Moras that I've had in elementary school, in high school, in college, and beyond, has been such a tremendous zechus and is something that we shouldn't take for granted. I think it's something that is very unique to our generation, having so many unbelievably knowledgeable, energetic, thoughtful, caring women who are teaching Torah. And so tonight's final shiur of holy women during the holy days is dedicated to each and every one of them. I'm reminded of actually my favorite scene of Tanakh. It has tremendous amount of drama. It has tremendous amount of, excitement. And I believe that it also has a tremendous key in truly understanding how it is that we make an impact on someone's life. The scene I'm thinking about is the scene of Eliyahu Hanavi in Har Har Carmel. We find the story in Malachim. Eliyahu is completely upset and devastated over the fact that Am Yisrael has been involved in Avodah Zarah and has clearly strayed away from God. And he makes a showdown with the King Ahav, who is the representative of Avodah Zarah in the kingdom. And they join together in Har Carmel. It's the biggest stage one can think of. And they have a duel. Whose God is true? Is it your God, Ahav, the gods, the Avodah Zarah that you have made your people stray against? Or is it Hashem? Is it Hashem who is the true and only God? And so Ahav starts with all the people there who believe that they are the ones who can get their gods going. And they do the Huyawaya dances and they try to, get them to do something to prove that they are true and that they are the true gods. And nothing happens, complete silence. There's nothing that transpires. And Eliyahu comes and he says, if Hashem is the true God, let him accept this korban, that accept the sacrifice that I give him. And without skipping a beat, there is a fireball from heaven that comes, consumes the sacrifice. And it's a slam dunk. Eliyahu has just proved that God exists in the world. And the people are beyond inspired. And they scream out, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim. And there's this moment of just, oh my goodness, I'm witnessing a master teacher, Eliyahu Hanavi, converting all these people who have been wayward and have gone towards other gods in this magnificent story of Tanakh. And like this, a snap, the people turn on Eliyahu. You would think that in this moment, it would be a complete, easy, wonderful environment for Eliyahu to be able to teach the people. And yet what ends up happening in a snap, in a moment, the people turn on Eliyahu and they're ready to give up Eliyahu to Ahab, who now wants to kill him for making such a mockery of himself. And what ends up happening is that Eliyahu has to run away. And as he runs away, he is devastated. As a teacher, he thinks he is a complete failure and he actually doesn't know what his purpose is. And he goes and he cries and he yells to God and he says, I'm finished. I'm done with these people. What am I supposed to do with them? How am I ever going to make an impact on them? And he wants nothing to do with them anymore. He wants to give up. He wants to go home. He's finished. He's through. And he hides in a cave and he no longer wants to come out and deal with Am Yisrael ever again. And a huge shaking of the ground, almost like an earthquake, comes through. A wind comes through. A fire comes through. Eliyahu is in no way inspired. And then the Navi tells us that there is a cold mamadaka. There is this soft voice, a voice of some sort of silence or of some sort of very soft note that ultimately inspires Eliyahu to come out of his cave. And it's there that Hashem basically says, Eliyahu, you can't give up. You have to go back to the people. Now, there's a lot to say about this story, but what makes such a profound impact on me is that cold mamadaka. Eliyahu had just made a huge, huge, unbelievable show where he proved that God existed in the world, so much so that the people called out Hashem Hu Elokim, and yet in a moment, they abandoned that. They were no longer inspired. They turn against Eliyahu. Eliyahu was so upset, he runs away and he goes into this cave and nothing is getting him out of the cave, not the winds, not the earthquake, not the fire, but a cold mamadaka, this very soft voice, gets his attention and ultimately brings him out. Hashem encourages him to go back to the people, and that's where we see the restoration or the lesson learned to Eliyahu, that to make an impact on someone, you don't need the light show, the fire, the things, the noise that are going to catch our attention. It's that very soft voice that very oftentimes comes from a place that we don't expect and that makes the lasting impact. Tonight's shiur is dedicated to one of our morot, one of our national teachers, someone who doesn't need the fire, who doesn't need the wind, who uses her own type of cold mamadaka, her own voice, in a way that is so impactful that it reverberates every single year on Rosh Hashanah and for generations over and over again. Tonight, I would like to look at the Haftorah of the second day of Rosh Hashanah. We read from Yirmiyahu, and it's a gorgeous nevuah that inspires us with hope, which inspires us of geula, of redemption. And at the end of this nevuah, we are told one of the most perhaps famous psukim, Ko amar Hashem, kol birama nishma, nehi bechi timarurim, Rachel mivaka al baneha, meana lihinachim al baneha, ki enenu. So says Hashem, that a voice in Ramah is heard, that same voice, that soft voice, almost as I read it, I hear it. Nehi bechi tamarurim, is weeping, is crying, is calling out. Who is that voice? Who is that one crying? It's Rachel. Rachel Imenu. She is mivaka al baneha. She is crying over her children. She is refusing. She will not give up. She will not be comforted for the sake of her children because they are no longer. What is so fascinating is that on Rosh Hashanah, the second day, the Haftorah tells us there is a call that comes from Ramah. And again, it's reminiscent to me of the called Mamadaka. It's this soft voice that comes from Ramah, crying and weeping for her sons, for her children, where Rachel decides that she won't let up until she gets what she so desires, her children to return home. The psukim continue, Ha'amar Hashem, Mini kolech mi bechi. Rachel, you don't have to cry. Ve'inayich dima, wipe your eyes from the tears. Ki yesh schar l'ulaseich. There is a reward for your work. Nu'um Hashem, v'shavu me'eretz oyev. You will see that they will return from the land of their enemies. V'yish tikva, and there is hope. La'achariteich. For after you, nu'um Hashem, what will be, Rachel? Why don't you have to cry? Shavu vanim l'gvulam. That children will return back home to where they're supposed to be. In one of the most empowering articles that Rabbi Lam has written, Alav HaShalom, he writes an article called Three Who Cried, in which he describes three women on Rosh Hashanah who use their tears. He describes Aim Sisra, the mother of Sisra, who cries over the fact that her son, Sisra, a decorated general who fights Am Yisrael for their destruction, is destroyed in battle and never returns home. So much so that Chazal tell us that the cry of the shofar is the crying of Aim Sisra, which seems like a fascinating concept, considering that Chazal couldn't have chosen any other woman, perhaps a Jewish woman who cries over her son lost in battle. We're using the sound of the shofar's cry to remind us of the cries of Aim Sisra. Rabbi Lam explains that it's this cry of the mother, Aim Sisra, who is crying over her son because she was so sure, she was so secure that her son will return. And now the fact that he has been killed in battle, that Am Yisrael was the one who were able to defeat his army, she's in shock. She doesn't know what to do. So that shock overtakes her body and she begins to cry. It's because she was filled with false optimism. She had thought that this was a shoo-in. Of course her son was going to win. There would be no chance that anybody else could beat her son. And when the reality hit that Am Yisrael was victorious at this moment, she begins to cry because she doesn't know how to deal with this dissonance of her thinking that her son would return and now that he will never return. And Rabbi Lam says in this article, he says, this is a very unfortunate cry. It's a cry that takes place when we think we're so secure with our lives that when something happens that's not according to what we have envisioned and what we planned and what we thought, we begin to cry because we realize that we were naive, that we thought we had it all and that it could never be taken from us. There was no reality. There was no reality check for Aim Sisra. And so Rabbi Lam says, what a tragic cry. He talks about a second woman who cries on Rosh Hashanah. That woman is Hagar. In our first year, we talked about how Hagar is banished into the desert with her son, Yishmael. And they think that they are facing death. They've run out of water. There's nowhere else to turn to. And so Yishmael falls ill. Hagar can't stand to watch her son die. So she throws him under a tree and goes away from him and gives up and doesn't offer a tefillah, doesn't offer anything but tears, thinking that this is the end of her story. And Rabbi Lam says about Hagar, what another tragedy of tears. Tragedy of a woman who gives up, who doesn't think that there is any opportunity for optimism. It's almost the opposite of what happens with Aim Sisra. Aim Sisra thinks for sure her son will come back. There's no doubt. She has such security in her life that it didn't pan out that way. She cries. Hagar, the opposite. She believes that there's absolutely no hope. There's no way her son's going to ever be able to recover. And so her tears are filled with desperation and with this thought of, there is absolutely no way for me to get out of the circumstances that I'm in. Rabbi Lam says, how sad are those tears where we completely give up and where we think our tears are the period to our story, that they're the finishing marks because there's nothing else for us to do. And then Rabbi Lam says, but there's a third woman who cries on Rosh Hashanah, and that woman is Rachel. And I would like to read his own words, for they are so, so beautiful and can capture it far better than I can. Here is a woman whose tears have moved history. Unlike Sisera's mother, they do not come from living an easy life and deluding herself into imagining that a day of reckoning will never come. Rachel lived a hard life, and a brief one. She knew trouble and anguish. She sees her children going into exile and recognizes the bitterness of reality. He begins his remarks on Rachel. He says, who is Rachel Imenu? Rachel Imenu was our mother, who for so many years was tried by infertility. And finally, she was given that beautiful bracha of a son, and then another. And then her life was cut short. Rachel, she had a difficult life. She knew that reality sometimes doesn't always match up with our fantasies. And yet, she's not like Aim Sisera, where she has this fantastical idea of what she would like her life to be, but she has a true reality. So what are her tears, Rachel? He continues, Rabbi Lam, her cry, her tears, her protest to God are the characteristics of the Jew throughout all of time. The Jewish soul beholds a reality in all its ugliness, but sets out to transform it. The tears of Rachel are the tears of a gallant soul who will not yield to the world, but rather will make the world yield to it. Though it may take centuries, they are not the tears of a vain sentiment or of self-pity, but of a powerful protest. They are a sign not of weakness, but of strength. Not of resignation or frustration, but of determination. The tears of Aim Sisera or Hagar are the end of their story. For Rachel, it's a beginning. Rabbi Lam says, Aim Sisera cries because she had these optimistic and non-realistic visions of her life, and when they didn't come true, she was lost. So she cried. Hagar, she looked at her life and she said nothing could ever get better. She was completely lost. She was completely devastated. And so her tears were of frustration, of weakness. But Rachel Imenu, when she cries, she knows that life can be ugly. She knows that there can be troubles and challenges. But when she cries, it's not cries of giving up. It's not cries of not understanding how she's in the situation that she's in. But it's inspiring tears. It's tears of saying, I recognize what is, and I'm going to build a better future, a better tomorrow. Her tears are the beginning of her story. She looks, as Yirmiyahu puts it in our perek, Lamed Aleph, the Haftorah of Rosh Hashanah on the second day, her sons and daughters are no longer in their land. They have been exiled. She has nowhere to believe that somehow there will be a geula. But yet she begins to cry. And she says, although I'm pained by the fact that my children are in galus, I'm not giving up. My tears are going to propel me, are going to push me, are going to make me change the reality somehow, some way. In one of the most powerful midrashim of these psukim, you have an actual dialogue between Rachel and Hashem. When everyone begs Hashem, return Am Yisrael back into Eretz Yisrael, he doesn't listen to any of them. But Rachel comes with her soft voice, with her ability to make an impact, and she says to Hashem, Hashem, you know me, you know my life, it was difficult. I even did something to preserve the dignity of my sister. The night I was to be married to my husband, Yaakov, our father switched my sister and I, and instead of embarrassing her, I took the quiet route. I was silent. I wasn't going to destroy my sister's reputation, and who knows what things will come out. I decided to give her the signs, to make sure that she would be able to marry my husband, my love, all for the fact that I didn't want to degrade her. Hashem, if I can have such mercy on my sister, And if I don't have that jealousy of, well, why is this happening to me? And why is my sister getting the husband that I want? And Hashem, can't you look at the people of Am Yisrael and say, okay, I'm going to give up a little of myself. I'm going to be merciful and bring you back, even though I've been hurt by you, Am Yisrael, that you've left to other gods. Rachel says, can't I awake this mercy in you? And Hashem says, yes, yes, indeed, Rachel. It is true. What you have done in your life propels me to think that I must do this for Am Yisrael. And so he says, "Bishavu vanim ligvulam." You will see, Rachel, that your tears, what you've done, will ultimately come true, that your children will return back home. And it's a fascinating midrash that always leaves us inspired, that with the self-sacrifice of Rachel, she ultimately is able to have her children return back home. And that's the point that Rav Lam is making in his essay. Rachel's story begins with her cries. It's not the end of her story here. It's not, my children have been banished and there is nothing for me to do. What does she do? She says, Hashem, remember I have zechuyos. Remember the way I acted to preserve the dignity of my sister? Please preserve the dignity of Am Yisrael. Return my children. It is such a powerful idea that when Rachel cries, when she is mivaka al baneha, that Rachel is ultimately teaching all of us for all future generations. When you cry, when you stand there on Rosh Hashanah and the tears are strolling down your streaming down your face, are you crying because you feel that you have nowhere else to go, that you've done wrong in your life and that your life hasn't panned out the way that you want? Are you crying tears of Aim Sisra? Are you crying tears of Hagar? Or will you cry like me? My children, will you cry like me, Rachel? That when I begin to cry, it inspires me to action. It inspires me to change. It inspires me to believe that there is a better tomorrow and that it's within me to be able to make that difference. For Aim Sisra, it was too much of a disconnection of what she thought reality was to what actually was. She couldn't change that mentality, and so her tears represented an end. Hagar, she couldn't see herself get out of the devastation, and that was her end. Rachel says, yes, things are hard. Yes, we have to face things that are ugly. But when we cry and we start to let that out, ultimately, that's when we can begin to start to build anew. I'd like to also point out that I think within this perek, Yirmiyahu gives us many other undertones of this message, that all hope is never lost, and it's specifically of the women, the Sidkaniot, who had this foresight through the generations to continue to cultivate Jewish building in all generations. If I can draw your attention to Pasuk Dalet, even before we're introduced to the crying of Rachel, it says something very interesting. Od evneich v'nivneit betulot Yisrael, od tidi'i tupayech v'yatzat b'mochol mischakim. Hashem says in this nevuah through Yirmiyahu, once again I will build and you will see the young maidens of Yisrael go out with their drums, dancing and playing those drums. Now when you hear those words, once again I'm reminiscent of the Psukim in Shemot that tell us that as Am Yisrael is crossing the Yam Suf, crossing the sea, where the Geula is almost complete, what happens? In Shemot, Perek Tedvav, Pasuk Chav Techaf Aleph, V'tikach Miriam HaNeviyah, Achot Aharon et Hatov, Biada, V'titzenu Kol Anashem Achreha, V'tupim V'macholot, V'ta'an Lahem Miriam, V'shiru Lahashem, Kigol Ga'a, Sus V'rach Vo Rama V'yam. That Miriam had her drums and she led the women in dancing and singing through the ocean, through the sea. Rashi says, "Betupim machalot." How did they have the drums? How did they have the instruments to sing and dance as they go through? And he makes the comment, "Mivtuchot hayusit kaniot shebedor." These were righteous women who had tremendous emuna Shakadosh Baruch Hu aseh lahem nisim, that Hashem would do nisim, Hashem would do miracles, he would take them out to Pimi Mitzrayim. So they took the drums from Mitzrayim. They knew that in the future Hashem would fulfill his promise to take Am Yisrael out of Eretz Mitzrayim into Eretz Yisrael. And so by their bedside, they had their drums ready. They knew that in a moment's notice, they grab their drums and bring it with them. So as they're crossing the Yam Suf, they were prepared because they knew all along that Hashem would come through. Once again, showing us that these remarkable women, in the midst of slavery, in the midst of hardship, where it would have been completely understandable for them to give up, to say there is no way out of this, kept those drums. Because just like a drum makes a very soft sound, and if you bang it louder and louder, it makes a louder sound, those beats, those sounds can ultimately make the biggest difference. You beat that drum, you dance, and you show that you will believe in a better tomorrow, that you can get out of despair. And it is with that, that it is within Yirmiyahu's prophecy, that as Hashem reassures us that although we've experienced exile, and although we've experienced tremendous loss and frustration and degradation, you will see things will be rebuilt once again. And it's exactly those women who will be holding those drums once again and dancing in the streets. And that soft voice, that soft cry that Rachel has for her children reverberates for all of time and teaches her children, don't give up like I didn't give up. I cried for you. Me'ana, I resisted. I wouldn't let up. I wouldn't be comforted. I wouldn't take no for an answer. Hashem could not say no to me that he would not return you. And I did so until he reassured me. V'shavu vanim ligvulam. There is a powerful song by A.B. Rottenberg called Teardrop. And although I don't have enough time to go through all of it, I highly recommend it. It's a beautiful musical piece, but the lyrics are really powerful. I'll just summarize. He writes a song about a Holocaust survivor, a widow, who is poor and she doesn't have much in her life, no one left. And every week she makes sure to light Shabbos candles. And she's left alone, she has no children, she has no family left. And yes, her memories are of barbed wire fences, but yet she doesn't cry, she doesn't let up. And one week she tries to get Shabbos candles to light, and she doesn't have any money to light for specific matches. So as Shabbos comes in, she's staring at this candelabra with the inability to light that spark, to light that fire. And she is overtaken by her emotions and she begins to cry. And that small tear starts to drip down her face and it goes and it falls off her cheek onto the wick. And miraculously, the touch of that tear to that wick sparks a flame and the candles are lit again. And as the song ends, that ultimately, God's love is but hidden, and in time we'll know why. But in the heavens, they had told her it's all right to cry. I found this to be an inspiring story of what the tears of our mothers throughout the generations have ultimately been. They have been the inspiration to continue to build, to continue to move forward. V'shavu vanim ligvulam, until the children return back home. And what I'd like to conclude with as finishing this series is that as we've seen, the tefillah of Sarah, the tefillah of Chana, we've seen the inspiration of Rivka in the Akedah. We've seen Rachel who cries over her children. That ultimately the message on Rosh Hashanah is that we never give up. We always move forward, whether it's our tefillah who moves us forward, whether it's our tshuva and our recognizing of a better future, or whether it's our tears that ultimately inspire us because we accept that which we've gone through, but ultimately pushes us to become even greater and even better. So I thank all the mechanchot, all the morot, all the mothers who ultimately inspire us in our generation And with that inspiration, we daven this Rosh Hashanah that, as difficult as maybe this previous year has been, we will storm the heavens with our tears, with our tefillot, with our actions, for a healthy, hopeful year, one where we'll sing and dance. Shavu vanim ligvulam. Thank you all very much. Wishing everyone a kativa v'chatima tova. And thank you so much for learning with me this series. And now I give it to Rabbi Cohen. All the best.